It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, international candies may be more popular and accessible than ever before here in the United States. Find out how that happened and get some recommendations to help broaden our sweet horizons. First, Larry Mueller joins us now because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations. It's your gift of any amount that makes it all possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Rob. Great to be back with you. And yeah. It's always fun to do these drives. And I want to thank everybody who has already given during this drive. It's wonderful. Thank you so much. We've got a new goal this hour. It's 10 gifts. And these goals are set aside to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs you rely on.
Let's meet this hour's goal. It happens one gift at a time. Let's start with yours right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's talk public radio for a minute. What does public radio mean?
I haven't figured that out, Larry. I've been here, I don't know how long, but I still don't know. Tell me about it.
Well, I think it means listener-supported radio.
I think that's right. That's a big part of it. And we appreciate our business contributors, our federal and state tax dollars that come in to help. Listener support really is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Your gift of any amount really does matter at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I don't know if you've gotten the socks, the WPR socks yet, or the WPR tote bag, Rob.
I haven't.
You imagine you're out and about, and we live in the same neighborhood. You're out and about, and I'm out and about. We're wearing our new WPR socks, and we're carrying our WPR tote bag.
That'd be pretty cool.
I think it would be really cool. And as you know, if you make a contribution, as you listen to Rob and I chatter on here, you could be showing off your WPR pride, starting conversations maybe. If you give $20 a month, or when you do, you can ask for the WPR socks and the tote bag. So give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Oh, you know what? I don't read stuff here. I don't check the emails and things like that. So you can get the tote bag and the socks for $20 a month.
Exactly.
I'm just hearing about it from you right now.
Exactly. Well, I'm the font of...
Of all knowledge, really.
Some knowledge.
A lot of knowledge. Larry has a lot of knowledge. WPR exists because people contribute. When we all give... Those contributions add up to make this program and the Larry Mueller Show possible. Your gift really does make a difference.
Simple as that. One gift at a time. Listeners make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Great news. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is super easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, maybe $10 a month.
That donation will come back to you every day in the form of engaging programs, so show your support right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and give as generously as you can.
Make that gift right now. Help us get to our goal of 10 gifts throughout this hour. We can do it with your help. WPR is listener-powered. That's why your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And you know what? In addition to funding the programs, your donation enters you in a drawing for a Quick Trip gift card. And Rob and I are not eligible for
True.
That. We are not.
But we do have to say Quick Trip gift card, which is harder than it sounds. That's why we're radio professionals.
Say that fast. And it's $250. You can use it to fill up your tank, stock up on groceries, pick up dinner. And sustainers, if you know those of you who are making ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered. And if you're not a sustainer yet, why not sign up right now? Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
We heard from Jesus in Green Bay who says, this is a fantastic public radio station. Why not give back to a station that gives so much to my life? Jesus, thank you so much. How about you? If you count on us for great conversations, make your gift, as Jesus did, to help fund it. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. Now, you may have already seen some Halloween candy stocked up and stacked up at the local grocery store with a lot of the standard options. What if there was something else out there beyond the ordinary American chocolates and gummies and Starbursts? Well, our next guest says there is. It's candy from other countries. Not only can it be really different than the American sweets we're used to, she says it can be way better. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite candy from another country? Maybe you found it there while you were traveling or somebody brought some home to you. Or if you're here from another country, what is a candy that you love back home that you maybe miss and have to try to find and get while you're here? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda Mull is a staff writer at The Atlantic covering health and also writes a column on American consumerism. It's called Material World. She recently wrote about international candy for The Atlantic. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me again.
What got you started down this road of international candies?
Well, next to where I go to the gym every week, there is a sort of a crunchy, hippie health food store type place that sometimes I go in and buy a coconut water. And I was at the checkout one day and sort of perusing, you know, even crunchy, hippie health food stores have candy at the checkout. And I was sort of looking at what was available and what might be interesting. And I chose a bag of strawberry licorice because I hadn't had any in a while. And I've always been a fan of like Twizzlers at the movie theater, something like that. So I took it home that night. I sort of opened it and idly, you know, threw a couple pieces in my mouth. And I realized that, wow, it was just fantastic. It was so, so good. I didn't really expect it to be that functionally different from any other strawberry licorice I'd ever had. So I flipped it over to like look at what I had acquired accidentally. And I realized it was from Finland. That it had like a very short ingredient list and the brand had been around for like 100 years. So I got very, very curious about, Scandinavian licorice in general and started looking into it. And they have, you know, regionally, they have a sort of fantastic tradition of it. And it just sort of got me thinking about like, over the years, especially in the past, like 5 or 10, I have, you know, had so many types of candy that are really fantastic, whether it's Japanese Kit Kats or Haichu or all of these other things that are just sort of like really interesting and really such a treat to happen upon and to try. And it seems that they're more available than ever. So I wanted to sort of test that hypothesis, and it turns out they are.
Yeah, you dug into this. Now, you know, maybe there was a Japanese candy that was popular with Japanese immigrants and they could go to a local grocery store that imported straight from Japan. That's been around for a long time. You found, it sounds like, a lot of these candies are just finding their way out of just that one community and finding more and more widespread appeal. What's going on?
Right. For a long time, if you wanted a candy that you had, had as a kid growing up in a different country or that you had purchased on vacation and enjoyed or something like that, you had to go to a specialty store. If it was British, maybe your grocery store would have it in the import foods aisle. Cadbury and things like that are sometimes available in those spots, but you were sort of out of luck otherwise. And what happened, I think that the Japanese brand Haichu was sort of a leader in this, in sort of like scoping out the market for US market share potentially. And they sort of realized that beyond their sort of existing market in cities with large Asian populations, a lot of other people could potentially like the candy that they sell. And they realized that because Salt Lake City was one of their strongest markets. And Salt Lake City does not have a very large Asian population, but what it has is a large population of people who have lived overseas for a couple of years because of LDS missions in the Mormon church. So they realized that it was largely white people who were buying their candy after encountering it in Asia and really loving it. So that was sort of proof of concept for them that they could market their products more widely and find people who would be interested in it. The thing with them is that Haichu, as you might expect, is extremely chewy. And texturally, there was sort of a question about whether people who didn't grow up with that texture would adopted as adults. And it turns out, yes. So what they did sort of fascinatingly is start distributing cases of Haichu for free to Japanese baseball players. And because they didn't really have any way into the market other than that. candy shelves are very much already spoken for by the sort of American giants like Hershey and Mars and Nestle, which is an international company but sells a lot in the United States. So they didn't really have a way to get people to stock their candy outside of these Asian markets that they already sold in. So they sent it to Japanese baseball players who then, handed it out to their teammates. In baseball, you spend a lot of time looking very closely at players who are eating things and chewing on things. Eventually, baseball beat writers found out that there was this candy that suddenly all of the entire roster was addicted to, and you could see it on TV. So they got some press that way, and things sort of exploded from there. And a lot of international candy uptake is sort of in that model, not necessarily as sort of shrewd as Haichu's manufacturers approached it, but a lot of it is word of mouth. People going on vacation, bringing it home. Candy makes a really easy thing to bring back to friends and family when you travel abroad, and sort of just passing it out or going overseas themselves and trying it. And then with the sort of robustness of internet shopping as we have it now, it's a lot easier to find things that you might otherwise not be able to find. So you get an opportunity to try things, and you get an opportunity for these brands to demonstrate to potential retailers that they have a real audience.
We're talking to Amanda Mall, staff writer at The Atlantic, where she recently wrote about international candy, why it can open up our sweet treat horizons, and we're seeing it more and more around the United States. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered candy from another land? Did you like it and want to bring it back home? Or was it strange and off-putting to you? Are you from somewhere outside of the United States? Do you have a favorite candy from your home country that you love? You love to eat whenever you can get your hands on it. Share it with your friends. Tell us all about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that candy conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about international candy. Amanda Mull is with us, staff writer for The Atlantic. She says in some cases it can be better than American sweets. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience of your own to share, that's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Heather is with us in Madison. Heather, hi.
Hi there. I am calling because I actually have a subscription to some treats that are international, and we got a box a while ago that had these. They are rhubarb custard bonbons, so they're a little round, actually not very round, bone marble size, and they have a mixture of rhubarb and this custard flavor, and they're chewy, kind of like a Haichu or a Starburst or something like that, and I find them very delightful just because rhubarb is not something that we normally have in candy here.
And Heather, you cut out for just a sec. Where are these rhubarb bonbons from?
England.
England. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And Amanda, Heather says, you don't usually see this particular flavor, rhubarb, in candies. That's something you found a lot. There are flavors and textures that are just off the radar in the American candy counter.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is one of the key reasons that international candy has found so many sort of eager adherents in the United States. When you look at industrially produced candy in the U.S., you get these very large companies making things that are distributed everywhere, in every region, in every market. So you get candy that tends to be made to sort of appeal to as many people as possible. And that makes it great candy. I wouldn't argue that the candy in the United States isn't good, but it does make it sort of bland and sort of, it tends to be a little bit sweet, maybe sweeter than some varieties overseas. And it doesn't have as many interesting flavors mixed in. Whereas overseas, you're looking at mostly countries that are not as quite as diverse as the United States. And whether that means ethnically diverse or just diverse as far as food culture, region to region, what you get is companies that are able to sort of tailor their products to a more specific audience that has more specific tastes than perhaps trying to sell candy to the entire population of the United States. So you get more interesting fruits, you get more interesting flavor combinations, you get savory and sweet mixed together, you get candy that's spicy, you get candy that includes fruit flavors that just don't exist in the United States because we don't have those fruits here. So you get this sort of range of flavors that is not as available in like the average American grocery store or the average American drugstore where you might pick up, you know, candy at the checkout counter. And that can be really fun. You know, international food has grown a lot in the United States as far as like interest. And it's just interesting to taste things from other places and, you know, taste what people think of when they think of candy.
Thanks a lot for that call and sharing the rhubarb bonbons. Now, you mentioned earlier, Amanda, baseball players being influencers. There are also a lot of social media people evidently getting into these candies. I want to give a listen to one of them. This is Michelle Brown, also known as Miss Bedhead, followed by about 500,000 people on TikTok.
Honestly, Japanese candy is so, like, creative. I love it. Okay, last thing I'm going to try in this part is this Kit Kat. I'm assuming that it's like a whole grain one. All right, let's see what this looks like. Oh, it's kind of melted. Okay, this is supposed to look like a regular Kit Kat, but it melted, but it's probably still going to taste the same, so cheers.
All right, internet influencers on board here, but I want to get into those Kit Kats. Now, a Kit Kat we might see on a counter in another country, maybe flavors we've never seen before in the United States.
Right. A lot of foreign candy is not necessarily candy made by companies that don't exist in the United States, but because so much of the US market is served by these like very large multinational corporations, you get companies that are familiar to Americans, but that are making just completely different things overseas for different international audiences. So a great example is the Kit Kats from that clip. And these are a type of candy that got a lot of interest very early in the US before we have seen this like very, very recent boom with TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. And they come in these sort of like wonderful flavors, matcha, strawberry cheesecake, orange chocolate, things that just do not, you know, end up in the aisle of Walmart and Target in the US. But if you can find a Japanese grocery store or if you order them on the internet, you have access to this enormous array of flavors in this sort of very familiar form factor. And it's like falling through a hole into a dimension of candy that you didn't realize existed, which is just fun. And it's pretty inexpensive to have that kind of fun.
Before we wrap up, Amanda, you mentioned the Finnish licorice. Do you have another favorite that you've encountered in your extensive research?
I really like the pistachio flavored Japanese Kit Kats. I really, really enjoy high chews of pretty much any flavor. And those are pretty widely available now. You can get them at Walgreens and CVS. Yeah, I think that those are my three big favorites.
Amanda, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Amanda Mull. Amanda covers health for The Atlantic and writes the column Material World on consumerism in the United States. She talked to us about her piece on international candy, why she says it's worth trying out. Coming up, Russia is mobilizing additional troops and staging illegitimate referendum votes in parts of Ukraine. We'll talk to an expert on Russian politics about the latest developments in the war. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Larry Mueller is with us. Your gift right now is so important. It's because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for WPR programs. It's all possible thanks to your support. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, we have about 35 minutes left in the hour, and we're looking for 9 more people to join in and contribute. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, what should they do?
They should give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. When you give, your gift will fund the programs you enjoy.
Speaking of enjoying, I really enjoyed this past segment from Amanda as she talked about candy and why other countries can give you a bigger range of tastes in their candy. And then we get a nice call about, oh, man, rhubarb.
That sounded pretty good.
Oh, rhubarb custard bonbons? Are you kidding me? I'd get those.
I would try
it,
yeah. Now, I've tried Dutch licorice. I have a friend from the Netherlands, and it's like this salted licorice. I got to say, it's probably an acquired taste. I'm not knocking it, but I think you'd have to get used to it for a while. Have you tried something, Larry?
I've tried things all over the world. I especially like the Caribbean. A lot of the chocolate is really good down there. So
all right.
Well, but these, you know, here we are gabbing about it, and these are the kind of conversations I think you can count on from Central Time.
And WPR is listener supported. That means your donation makes these fun conversations and the serious stuff available. Give now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
You know, I pay a lot of my bills online, and maybe you pay your bills online as well. Support WPR in that same streamlined way by becoming a sustainer.
But unlike bills, you choose the amount you're going to pay.
Yes.
Pick an amount that works for you, 10 or 20 bucks a month, say, then set up an ongoing monthly gift from your bank account or credit card. Easy to start up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You get a lot of election news coverage here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's great from January to June, where there, you know, there's caucuses and primaries every week, and now we're, you know, here we are. We're looking to probably add that to that coverage, right?
That's right. Well, I think we'll keep talking about the elections for the next couple of months. You've counted on WPR since the election season started. We'll be here for you with results and analysis and in-depth coverage on elected officials and their policies. Your financial support makes it all happen. Cast your vote for thorough election coverage with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a dollar or more a day on things that are part of your routine, like a cup of coffee or maybe your favorite snack.
Consider the news, info, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a buck a day or $30 a month is the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Support the programs you enjoy every day.
30 minutes left in the hour, looking for 9 more pledges. You can help us now. Do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
Give $20 a month or more. Ask for the combo WPR tote bag and WPR socks. Give right now. It really does make a difference. Online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, after being pushed back by Ukrainian forces, Russia is organizing sham annexation votes in occupied territory. We'll get the latest from the Russian invasion and the Ukrainian resistance. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me now. Our goal is to help keep you bringing you topics like important events happening around the world, U.S. elections, and fun stuff, too, like candies from around the world. It's your support that makes that variety of conversations happen, because listener support is the biggest source of funding for WPR programs. Give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And when 7 more people join in during the next 25 minutes or so, we'll meet our goal. And we have these hourly goals. They're set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donation right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Listening to the Ideas Network is kind of like going out for coffee with a smart friend. It's enjoyable. It's informative. It piques your curiosity.
And somebody has to pay for it. You make the conversations on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. So give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You're already a Wisconsin Public Radio listener, and thank you. We're glad you're out there. And thank you to everyone who's already a member. It's listener support, your support, that makes WPR an unparalleled resource here in Wisconsin and beyond.
Because WPR is your radio home, I think you should support it right now, as a matter of fact. Make the news, the discussions, and the music possible. Maybe it's your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing today. You'll be entered to win a $250 Quick Trip gift card when you donate any amount for the WPR programs you love. What would you buy?
I know $250 is good for filling up the gas tank a couple times, you know, but I think if I have that gift certificate, I'm also picking up a box of Glazers.
I would buy all the breakfast sandwiches I could buy. Those are amazing.
Make it last a long time. As many bags of milk, $250 will buy.
You want to make that, the $250, last a long time.
You'll have 5 chances to win. Find all the details at WPR.org/drawing. Enter now with your gift of any amount. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation this fall member drive. Get entered into that drawing automatically. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with special guest Larry Mueller. The WPR programs you enjoy are all possible thanks to your support. Your contribution of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference for the entire community.
Here's a way to think about it. Say you hear 3 things a day that you really glad you heard on WPR. Now, if you paid a dime for each one of them, that would work out to about $10 a month. So make a gift of $10 right now or whatever amount that's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Maybe you gave a few years ago. You feel like you've done your part. Well, thank you for that gift, but it's your continued support that makes the essential news, interesting conversations, and cultural content on Wisconsin Public Radio possible today and into the future.
If it's been a while since you donated, this is a perfect time to renew at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and we will be glad to have you back.
It's the first day of the week here, hoping to hit our goal this hour. We can do it with your help. You can make it possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, your donation enters you to win that $250 to spend on gas, food, drinks, and more at Quick Trip. No contribution is necessary. You can see WPR.org/drawing for details. But hey, better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And of course, sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, you are automatically entered.
If you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That way you provide ongoing support for the programs you love and get entered into these drawings.
Saul, by the way, says from Stevens Point, says that you are a barrel of fun, Rob.
Me?
You are.
Wow.
And
nicest
Kate
thing
is,
anybody's said about me.
Kate's a cup of good cheer.
Nice. And wait a minute. You're on this too, Larry. You're a load of laughs.
I
can't argue with that.
Well,
on the air and behind the scenes.
How about this? Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference. Go right now and give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Russia is mobilizing at least 300,000 more troops to fight in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin is staging what the U.S. is calling sham referendum votes in Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine. The votes are intended to show public support for annexation into Russia, but Ukrainians have reported armed Russian troops going door-to-door to collect votes. Russia has faced pushback domestically for its mobilization effort with anti-war demonstrations and many military-age men reportedly fleeing the country. Yoshiko Herrera is a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's teaching a new class this fall all about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yoshiko, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with this call-up, this mobilization. 300,000 reserve troops, apparently with military background, at least according to the announcement. It may be casting a wider net in reality. What do you make of that move?
Yeah, I think this is a delayed strategy, and it probably isn't going to help very much, but it potentially could cause a lot of domestic unrest within Russia. I think the reason for the lack of calling this a war and having a full-scale mobilization earlier is that the regime was concerned they didn't have the public support that they needed for a mobilization to work. And I think the calling for a partial mobilization is sort of a half measure, acknowledging that weakness, and the protests that we see just provide evidence that indeed they don't have the support that they need.
That move comes as there's this referendum, as it's being described by the Russians, in territory they currently control in Ukraine, provinces from the initial separatist provinces that Russia had backed, kind of making a corridor to Crimea. Do you see any legitimacy in this vote at all?
No, there's no legitimacy. I think it's good to even call them sham referenda or pseudo referenda because they're not free and fair in any sense of the word. And they are an attempt by Russia to make it look like they have some level of popular support in those regions, possibly as a precursor to annexation of those regions into Russia, which would then allow Russia to say that it's their territory, not Ukraine, that is where the fighting is. But I think that externally, everybody understands exactly what's going on. And I don't think there's going to be hardly any countries that recognize the legitimacy. I mean, even Serbia is not on board with it. A longtime ally of Russia.
The apparent Russian goal of this invasion seems to have changed. Initially, it seemed like it was going to be a very fast, overwhelming attack. The expectation, it seemed like, from the Russian military and political leadership was that the Zelensky regime in Ukraine would collapse, the military resistance would dry up really quickly. Obviously, that didn't happen. Now we have this focus on eastern and southeastern Ukraine. What's happening there now?
Yeah, well, as you said, the goals have shifted because they haven't been able to achieve any of the military goals. They have been underprepared and have misunderstood both the Ukrainian and international response every step of the way. I think they're getting somewhat desperate after the big losses a few weeks ago around Kharkiv region. Now the Russians are trying to hold on to land that is connected to Russia and goes along the southeastern shore of Ukraine connecting to Crimea. So the four places where the referenda are places where Russia would have a so-called land corridor to Crimea. But I think that the Ukrainian military is currently working on liberating Kherson, one of the provinces. And so I don't think this strategy, I mean, that's clearly what the Russians want at this point, is to at least hold on to these four regions. But I don't think just because they want it means they're going to necessarily be successful.
We had this string of Ukrainian military successes more in the northern part of the region we're talking about now. I know you can't read too much into just a couple weeks of an ongoing war, but how big a deal was that?
Well, I think it's a big deal in terms of momentum and expectations, because morale and the will to fight is a big part of this war for both sides. On the Ukrainian side, they're extremely motivated, and they have a very strong will to protect the sovereignty, to protect the existence of their state. It's an existential war for Ukraine, literally. So people are very motivated to fight. And so a victory like that in Kharkiv, where they're actually able to push back Russian troops, is important to show people that all of the death, destruction, damage to buildings, etc., that there may, you know, that victory is possible because they're able to liberate certain areas. On the flip side of it, I think the morale and will to fight on the Russian side has always been low because there's no obvious reason for this war. The defeat, I think, is seriously damaging for Russian morale. And it doesn't help with the recruitment to say, look, we sustained these incredible losses because our military isn't very good. Come fight with us now. It's not a very compelling message.
We're talking to Yoshiko Herrera from UW-Madison, Russia expert there, looking at the latest news from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yoshiko, we've talked in the past about how it can be difficult to assess public opinion in a place like Russia. That said, from the demonstrations, from some potential inductees to the Russian military voting with their feet and showing up in Istanbul and elsewhere, what do you make of what we're seeing from the people within Russian borders?
Yeah, I just talked about this in my class today. We have a theory from Hirschman in political science that talks about exit voice and loyalty. And in response to this mobilization, in response to the war, you see exit with, estimates of 200 to 300,000 people leaving in the last week to avoid the draft. People can also go hide at their dachas, hide in their apartments, just not show up. That's one. Voice in terms of protests, people going out on the street, that's very risky. Any interaction with police per se, touching a policeman, this can lead to an immediate prison sentence. So the protests are significant, I think. The regime has tried to silence people, to make people think that protest is futile, that there's nothing that can be done, that they hold all the power. But nevertheless, you're seeing some people taking risk to go out and protest. And of course, there are some regime supporters, so there is some loyalty, but there's also the context of the regions, the non-Russian regions, ethnically non-Russian regions or poor regions. These tend to be places where there's more authoritarian control of regional officials over the population. And so people may feel they don't have any choice but to show up and join. But nevertheless, the whole reason I think that mobilization is dangerous for the Putin regime is that everything else they do is about reducing the power of the individual. So with voting, by having fraudulent elections, by not allowing candidates you actually want to run, the power of an individual to vote and effect change is very, very limited. It's almost zero at this point in Russia. But with mobilization, the power is squarely back on the individual. That person either shows up or they don't. And they either fight or they don't. And the regime cannot lie their way out of this. They can lie about the number of recruits, lie about how well the mobilization is going, but that doesn't actually get them dedicated human beings willing to risk their lives for the regime. And so the mobilization has shifted the power to individuals who are able to make these choices about whether to show up, and if they do show up, to fight, or whether to leave the country altogether.
Yoshko, one question that I'm kind of curious about. There's been some suggestion all along that Putin and Russian leadership have tried to make sure that the burden of this war isn't falling on the critical cities of Moscow and St. Petersburg, recruiting people or sending troops from, as you mentioned, minority areas, lower income areas. Is that changing now with this new recruitment drive, this new call up?
I think what's not clear is whether it's a particular strategy by the regime, let's say, to lessen the requirements or exemptions for these big cities, or whether the big city administrations are simply not willing to go along with it. What we're seeing is that the regions most loyal to Putin, the ones most dependent on money and political support, are the ones sending in the recruits. But this could be about capacity, that the state has the ability to compel some of these regions and some municipal authorities to meet their targets. And others, they just don't have that power. I don't see the Russian authorities, for example, having a lot of power over, say, the city of Yekaterinburg, where they arrested a very popular former mayor recently. So I think that the strategy, if there is a strategy, is to sort of get the recruits where you can. But I don't think they've actually thought it through and figured out how to compel people who don't want to agree to participate.
Now, of course, this is a destructive war for the militaries on both sides, for the Ukrainian civilian population. Still, a lot of people nowhere near their homes at this point. How does this end? Given the goals of both sides, Russia wanting to take big parts of Ukraine still, Ukraine obviously not wanting to give those up, how do we get from here to a peaceful resolution?
Yeah, this is a very difficult question. I think that from all we can see about both sides are resolved to continue to fight. Ukrainians are very dedicated to keeping their territory, to maintaining the existence of their state. And it makes sense because of the war crimes and the things that we have seen in Russian-occupied areas. For Ukrainians to give up territory, what peace means, it means subjecting your citizens to torture and war crimes. And that's not a peace that a lot of Ukrainians or people externally are willing to accept. And on the Russian side, they see this also as vitally important for their status, for the security of the regime in terms of maintaining its veneer of power. I mean, the regime rests on a lot of fear, and that fear is because people have to think it's powerful, a little bit like the Wizard of Oz, but a horrible, destructive sort of wizard. So you have to maintain the idea that you're in control and you're powerful. And so the cracks in the mobilization process and the weakness in the fighting are destructive for the regime. And that's, I think, going to make Putin more resolved to continue. So unfortunately, I think that the only possibility for a real peace is through a military defeat of Russia, and that looks like it's going to take some time.
Yoshiko, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's Yoshiko Herrera, political science professor at UW-Madison, where she teaches about Russian and post-communist politics. She was with us today looking at Russia's mobilization of more troops and Putin's efforts to hold sham referendum votes for annexation of a big chunk of eastern and southern Ukraine. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me now. Your gift right now is so important because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Central Time and all the shows you count on are possible thanks to your support. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Just a few minutes left in this hour, and we're looking for four more people to join in. So make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered. That means your gift right now makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, this last segment was really fascinating for me, Yoshiko, talking about the Russian invasion and the partial mobilization. What I really hadn't heard about or thought much about was how different parts of the country are reacting to this mobilization and what's going on in the minds of some Russians. It's a really important information, and these are the kinds of conversations you count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported, and that means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes this and all the conversations you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And this member drive, you can broadcast your love for WPR with two new thank you gifts. And for the WPR tote bag, when you give $10 a month, or a pair of WPR socks when you give $15 a month, and better yet, you can get both thank you gifts when you give $20 a month. Your love for Wisconsin at public radio will be on full display, and you'll ensure the entire community has access to essential news and entertainment with your gift. Ask for your WPR Duo right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, I figured it was important for me to become a sustaining member because I needed to give back. I really enjoy the programs here. I get to hear it every day, and I figured there's buy-in. When I'm a sustainer, I enjoy driving to work, leaving work, being at home, even going to bed listening to WPR. Most media that you hear now, most programs don't have that objectivity that WPR offers. I enjoy all the shows, and I figure you gotta let your money talk. I'm Eben from Appleton, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 at Central Time. The Fall Member Drive, Rob Ferret here with Larry Mueller. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you count on. That's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a big impact.
And you might think that you don't have to support WPR because somebody else is. Well, WPR has been around for years because thousands of people have made the decision to support something that's important to them.
Now it's time for you to make that decision. Many first-time donors will give $10 or $20 a month. You choose what works best for you. Give now. It's time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob's right. As a donor, you get to decide how much to give, and maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on takeout food or entertainment, for example. You name it. It's stuff you enjoy and stuff that makes life better, just like listening to WPR. The important thing is that you decide the amount that's right for you, then make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're making progress, and we're really close. When two more people support the WPR programs in the next few minutes, we'll meet our goal. WPR is listener-powered, and that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
Let the world know WPR is your source for information and inspiration with the new WPR tote bag and socks. Ask for both, actually all three, because I think you get two socks. Not just one sock. So ask for it all. When you give $20 a month or more with radio and Wisconsin-inspired designs, your WPR pride is going to be on full display. Support the quality news and entertainment you count on. Ask for the tote bag and socks when you give. $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Central Time, counting down toward the end of the hour, getting close to our goal, Larry.
Oh, I'm so glad. I am so happy. I just wanted to talk right over the top of you. Let's just give the number again, WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. How about that?
Yeah, let's do it. Get the tote bag, get the socks, and give $20 a month or more. You count on us for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for it, so make your gift. Help us hit our goals for this drive when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Joy in Green Bay says, I've learned so much by listening to WPR and continue to feel like I'm growing with each program. Linda in Sheboygan says, I love WPR. I listen in my car and while doing errands. It contributes so much in my life.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Joy. They get it. How about you? You count on us. We count on you. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support.